Hi, this is Manton Reese.
And this is Daniel Jalkut.
And this is Core Intuition. It's going to be expensive.
Well, Manton, if you ever want to know, like, when you're starting a podcast with me, how is this going to be? Is Daniel going to be crazy Daniel or happy Daniel? Then just look at Apple's stock price.
If it's going up, you're happy.
I'm happy. One day, Manton, my emotional well-being will not be directly tied to Apple's stock.
So do you check it every day? Do you, like, you know, swipe over into dashboard or whatever?
You know what? I have, I'm pretty bad about some sites that I go to as kind of like, almost like nervous habits.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually facilitate this with, you know, my app Fast Scripts has keyboard shortcuts, and I have scripts for, like, you know, context specific for Safari. So if I'm in Safari, I have these keyboard shortcuts I can press that will do, like, control Y goes to Yahoo stocks.
Okay.
You know, and I have, like, control N for news and control D for Apple developers site. So, you know, some of it's actually useful. Like, you know, I don't just go to Apple developers site as a nervous habit, but I go there often enough that it's useful for me to have that. And
I just know it can be kind of crazy to check all the time because I don't know. It drives me nuts if I'm checking a stock too often. You know, oh my gosh, it's up a little bit this hour. No, it's a little down a little bit this next hour. No, what's happening?
Yeah. Oh, it's terrible. And I getting to the point, I basically fluctuate in my abuse of this keyboard shortcut. So sometimes I will. It's kind of like RSS and NetNewsWire and stuff like that. Like, sometimes I'll just, like, have it running and I'm always checking it. I'm like, oh, I need something new to read. And then sometimes I'll be like, why? Why does it seem like I'm out of the loop? Why do I not know anything that's going on? Mm-hmm. And it'll be like, oh, NetNewsWire, I accidentally quit it like last week and forgot to reopen it. And then I'll reopen it. It'll be like 5 million unread articles. And I'll think, like, what did I really miss over that week, you know? And sometimes the same with checking stock prices. I'll be like every day for a while, and then 1 week will go by and I'll be like, oh. And then sometimes I'll go and check on, you know, in particular Apple, it'll be like, oh no, it's like down 50 points. So it goes both ways. You get the occasional, like, surprise that, oh, I wasn't paying attention and now it's up 50 points, which is the happy state I'm in today. And then other times it'll just be like, oh, I wasn't paying attention and the whole, you know, everything went to hell.
Yeah.
Anyway, the point is right now, Apple is back in the 500 club. They are above $500 per share. They are handily beating, once again, Exxon as the world's most valuable publicly traded company. And I don't know. I'm in a good mood. I admit it. I like this. It makes me feel good.
Yeah, I wonder if that'll continue to climb up a little bit. I mean, we're nearing the release of a whole bunch of new stuff. iOS 7 might be weeks away. Hard to believe. New iPhones announcement is supposed to be September 10th, apparently.
Yep.
That's going to be cool, apparently. I mean, especially if they have the 5C, you know, happens when you will have a couple different new iPhone product lines. I think that'll be interesting.
And there's a lot of
Mac Pro?
A lot of rumors still about the so-called iWatch.
Really?
Yeah.
I've missed them. I thought those had died away for a little while.
Yeah, they probably have, but it still gets mentioned. It still gets mentioned, like, with some like credibility, I think. Like, you know, it'd be like, oh, it's not just like some wild fangled idea. It seems like people mention it and then, like, cite something like All Things D or something like that. I don't know. I'm making that up. So I'm not actually citing All Things D. It seems like people cite All Things D on this subject.
I think Apple has a bunch of good stuff to ship this fall, even ignoring the watch.
And did you hear about the gold iPhone?
I heard some people joking about it, but I couldn't tell if that
that's
was true.
Well, that's another one where it's, I think, cited back to All Things D. And, you know, All Things D is one of those that kind of people tend to speculate is like the feed, like the explicit leak conduit for Apple. Have you ever heard that? Like, basically, they test, you know, they test the ideas there. So they're like, what if there was we're going to do a gold watch. There you go. A gold iPhone. Well, I was like skeptical about it too, Manton, but apparently people who know about these things believe that it's a really, really, really good idea for Apple to make a gold iPhone, because apparently gold is a very popular color in China.
Oh, okay. So I can see it being, so I expect that the new cheaper iPhone to come in different colors. And I think they've even leaked different, we've seen some colored, faceplate or something. But I expect that they'll give it that. You know, we've never had colored iPhones except black and white.
Yeah.
It's time, 5-6 years, whatever. It's time to have colored stuff. They did that with the iPod Touch, the old original iPods, something Nintendo loves to do if a product is kind of lagging a little bit. Introduce a new color, boost sales. It's guaranteed. But I expect we'll see that. So I could see gold being one of like 5 or 6 colors in the low-end iPhone line. I couldn't see gold being like one of the top couple colors in addition to white and black. That seems really strange to me.
This article I read would place it in the top tier because it's part of this like good fortune and like good luck. And it's not just some like chintzy little like gold. And the article also, it showed like a mock-up, I think, of it. Mm. And it was it was a very subdued kind of gold. It wasn't like glitzy gold.
I'm looking at it now.
You see it?
Yeah, it doesn't look how I imagined it when you first said it.
Yeah. It's
it
more
doesn't
like
look like gold plated, like shiny over the top.
Yeah.
Blingy.
So that's it's more like Cartier or something. It's like more like jewel, it's more like a fine, I don't know why I say Cartier, but it feels kind of like that. Like the mock-ups at least make it look like something you would expect. It's not like cheap imitation gold look, even though it is cheap imitation gold.
It looks tasteful.
Tasteful, yes.
When you say gold, I just imagine this gold plating, just shiny. It doesn't look that bad.
It doesn't. And I'm a goldist. I don't like gold. I'm anti-gold.
There's no way I would buy a gold iPhone.
No way. And I don't even like anything. I don't like anything gold.
Mm-hmm. You mean real gold?
Yeah, I don't like gold. Yeah, I'm not into gold. And my wedding ring is not gold. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't buy a gold iPhone either. But, not to get too off track here, Manton, but actually I think there's something interesting, though, in this whole, like you mentioned, there's never been a colored iPhone. And there's a lesson, I think, for those of us, especially indie developers, which is withholding possibilities is a really interesting way to like keep your options open, not only your options open down the line, but also to sort of have like these splashes in reserve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Like when you shipped Clipstart and you're like, what if I ship a video management app that doesn't support YouTube? Right? And then you're like, hey, it's still a cool video management app, but you withheld this YouTube support, and then bam, YouTube support. And like Apple, if you think about like one of the things people criticize about Apple is they're like, oh, well, it's just an iterative improvement over the best phone of all time, right? But these little things like withholding colors, that just gives them like an ace in the hole.
Right. And it's something easy they can do. Doesn't require a year of engineering time to make a new color. Yeah, I agree. The Clipstart example is funny because I withheld it just because I didn't use YouTube.
kind of ribbing you on that
I
one.
Know. But it's a great point, and I think I should look for more areas like that where I can add a big, something that feels big that has very little cost to develop and doesn't negatively impact the app in any way. And I think adding services like that is a great example of that.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a balance there where it's like, you know, you don't want to be customer hostile in the sense that you're like withholding something that would help a lot of people, but you just want to like keep it in reserve just to have something, I don't know, free and easy. But it's got, you know, some it's not super consequential whether an iPhone comes in red, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
So it's reasonable to sort of like have some withholding of variations. And I don't know, that's just something. And I think if you're like me, and most developers I think are in this respect, you want to throw everything in plus the kitchen sink. And any kind of like touchstone philosophy that helps restrain that a little bit. Like, you know, my tendency, Manton, if I'm coming up with like a 1.0 is of an app, is to say, oh, well, it can't ship without that feature. That's like, that's deadly, right?
Yeah.
And anything that can help you reground yourself in this idea that withholding stuff is not only okay, but could have really great consequences for you is, I think, a really smart idea. Is a really, yeah, really good idea.
I agree. I mean, and to simplify the product in the initial release so that people understand it, maybe just a huge win overall. I'm working on a new app for iOS 7. And it has this problem of like the kind of the pitch and how I talk about the app is too complicated and people don't get it. And part of that is it's the kitchen sink. It has, I think, a lot of features, and some of the features aren't directly related to one another. So by kind of peeling that back and simplifying, not taking features away, but kind of simplifying what the top, like the big features, like the core thing, the one thing that it does or the two things that it does really well. I think helps people understand the app and immediately get it and know if they want it. And so in some cases I could totally see that being, taking a couple smaller features and either completely downplaying or actually taking them out and then rolling them out in, 1.1 or 1.2 after people already get the app and understand what it's about.
Yeah. Very smart. This is great. This is the Manton and Daniel self-advice hour.
Right, exactly. I'm taking notes myself right now.
Well, you know, self-advice is great because we can all use a little more of it. And by doing it here on the air, we can hopefully benefit some other folks as well. So Manton, the other thing that Apple, people noticed, or at least I noticed in the past week with Apple, was their... It came out that they are promoting the Mac Pro in movie theaters with like a really subtle, I think like no voiceover even, just like, I think it's the same spot they showed at WWDC where it's kind of like a, almost like Mission Impossible style, like, you know, I don't know, is it Mission Impossible style or like James Bondy or something? It's kind of like the da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Right.
And it's like, it just shows these like sleek curves of this amazing, you know, machine. And rotating into view the Apple logo, and then it's apparently it ends with like fall 2013. I don't think it says that. It just shows like a title that
right.
It indicates it's coming this fall.
And it feels very much like a movie trailer, teaser kind of, especially where the way it starts, because it starts, you know, we're at WWDC and we see this. We know it's going to announce some kind of Apple hardware thing, but I assume if you're in a movie theater and this starts,
yeah,
you might think it's a movie trailer. You don't mean it takes at least 10 or 20 seconds in until you see the Apple logo and you see that it's a computer.
Right. And I actually saw another Apple trailer in the movie theater. I don't know if you've seen this one. It's like really, in my opinion, very cheesy. It's like, I assumed at first it was like some kind of like Exxon commercial about how they're saving the environment by like, you know, digging oil wells or something. Cause it was just like very fluffy. I can't even remember the details now, but I wasn't impressed. And I, you know me, I love Apple. So it's when Apple does most things, I'm like, hey, there's an Apple commercial. Everybody be quiet. You know, me in the living room, this is important. You know, and everyone's like, hey, it's a commercial break. No. This is an Apple commercial.
The same way. My family hates me because I like to mute all commercials. I just hate.
And then you turn it on.
It's so funny. But the Apple one comes, oh, this is a good one. Yeah, like one of the, the ones they did a couple months ago, you know, we love music kind of style of, I love this commercial. It's like, oh, we're going to turn this one out. This is good.
Yeah. So it really strikes me when a commercial is from Apple doesn't, I don't like it when I'm like, oh, that was sad. I think I like this Mac Pro one, but you know, I blogged about this. I assumed they would at least say in the commercial that it is in fact going to be assembled here in the USA.
Yeah.
And as far as I can tell from people who have seen the trailer, they don't mention that, which seems like a missed opportunity to me because, you know, Gruber on the Daring Fireball said, you know, it's a bold marketing move or something, impressive marketing, I think he said, to have it, you know, marketing the Mac Pro to the everyday people who go to movies. And I was like, well, no, it makes sense because they're going to say made in America. And everyone's going to be like, oh, hot damn, buy an iPad because it's all about America. And apparently they don't say that. So what sense can you make of marketing the Mac Pro to everyday moviegoers?
Hmm. Yeah, that's too bad. I do think they should, any opportunity they get, they should mention that. And until we're sick of hearing it, I mean, they should make a big deal about that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So... It also, I don't think, well, we haven't seen the actual trailer, I guess, but I don't think it actually says Mac Pro anywhere. So it's a kind of a strange.
It just says fall. It says fall 2013.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's interesting. Actually, maybe by leveraging the fact that this is a beautiful thing, that customers who aren't tuned into Apple don't even know. Like, this is interesting. Actually, customers who are seeing this ad may think it's like the Apple TV or something.
Right. It's hard to tell what the thing is. Yeah. It doesn't look like a computer, really. I mean, it's just...
So by being as vague as possible, maybe they get multiple benefits out of this ad. They get, like, Apple's cool. Apple has spy music on its ads. Apple has sexy hardware. Apple has something coming in fall 2013. Oh, and that reminds me, shouldn't we be buying iPads and iPhones for Christmas? that's a different angle on it. One very specific, though, explanation somebody on Twitter gave me was that if you want the movie industry insiders to know about your product, the best way to advertise it is right in the movie trailers, because everybody who's an insider goes to movies.
That's actually a really great idea. I could see them doing that. Like, they're not actually marketing to everyday moviegoers. They're trying to get the video editors and the special effects guys. And if everyone else finds out about it too, that's fine, but it's worth it just to get those other guys to make sure they see it. Because this is not a product that's for everybody. It's going to be expensive. And this is not something that, like, if you have an iMac at home that, you know, you share with your kids and family or whatever, and you're thinking about upgrading, you're not going to get a Mac Pro.
Yeah.
So it is a strange move, or it seems strange until you framed it that way. It actually makes a lot of sense to me.
Well, we might be making some sense of it, Manton. It has been known to happen before, and it may be rare, but we should cherish these rare occasions when we manage to do that.
Okay, we have a new sponsor this week. It's Oyster. Oyster makes it easy to build, test, and use a library of regular expressions. Oyster features code generation in over 11 languages and integration with popular snippet libraries, Dash, and CodeBox. Syntax highlighting, dynamic matching, including replacement templates, and clipboard, drag and drop code generation all work together to help you get the most out of your regular expressions. With Oyster, it has never been easier to exploit the power of regular expressions in your projects. Oyster is just $4.99 in the Mac App Store. Find out more at redwhenexcited.com/oyster. That's red, R-E-D, whenexcited.com/oyster.
Boy, Manton, what a perfect sponsorship for our audience, because we have a heck of a lot of programmer nerds we are proud to call our listening base. And everybody who programs on any platform for any period of time eventually ends up working with regular expressions. And there's kind of, you know, there's kind of like jokes about it. You know, now you've got two problems, et cetera, et cetera. But the fact is, sometimes regular expressions just really, they just boil down a problem to this great, you know, concise solution. The problem can be coming to the solution. You know, I use regular expressions in MarsEdit, for example. The syntax highlighting that the code editor does is based in regular expressions. And boy, this app, I have to say, Oyster is a revelation for this kind of thing, because if you're like me, all of your regular expression development has taken place in a code editor like Xcode or BBEdit, trying search and replace again and again to see what happens.
Yeah.
Oyster just takes that whole idea and says, what if there were a dedicated app for not only doing that iterative process of tweaking the regular expression and seeing how it affects the some example text, but they go a step further. You can save these oysters. They call them in Oyster, you can save these snippets, these regular expressions. They call them pearls, to go with the oyster motif. You can save them to iCloud, and you can even share and search for oysters in this like global, you know, network-based regular expression archive. So lots of really cool stuff in here. I immediately, when I started playing with it, went to Xcode, searched for my own regular expressions, started pasting them in to Oyster, because you can save them, and you can also save them with like specific tests, specific test text. Right. So you can just see at a glance that all of your regular expressions that you use regularly in your apps are actually working. And if you come up with a weird edge case, you can just add a new test in Oyster and keep a record of exactly how you expect it to work.
Yeah, this is a great app. I've needed something like this for a while. Like you said, everyone uses regular expressions eventually. I'm so bad at them, considering how long I have been using them. You know, I mean, years and years and years ago, I wrote my first one, and I still am no good. I still have to look at the documentation or fiddle around on the web trying to find something to make it work. So this, so much quicker to iterate and improve and test regular expressions. Also comes with really good documentation, which is really nice for people like me who forget the syntax. And it mentioned this in the blurb a little bit, but you can copy the regular expression right out. It'll actually copy Objective-C code. So you're testing this, you're getting it right, and then you can copy Objective-C code, paste into your app. And that doesn't sound like a huge win, but it is, especially if you have anything weird that needs escaping, like quotes in the regular expression string. You know, it'll escape those correctly. For a long regular expression, that alone saves a lot of time. So really, really nice app.
Yeah, that's really cool too. That escaping thing is great, because then you can actually store the regular expression in Oyster in its, you know, native readable format.
Yeah.
I actually had to unescape some stuff to get it into Oyster. But, yeah. You know, now I envision keeping all of my stuff organized in Oyster, and when I need to come back to it, it'll just be right there. So thanks, redwinexcited.com/oyster. Thanks so much for sponsoring the show. And folks, really give this a look. For $5, it will probably save you a lot of anguish, and even if you're only doing one regular expression one time in your career.
Right. Yeah. For $5, it's really a no-brainer. So check it out. Thanks for sponsoring the show. All right. Well, something kind of annoying happened to me when I was on vacation with my iPhone. So I'm running the iOS 7 beta, of course, on my regular everyday phone. And, you know, the first couple of betas were flaky, and I kind of regretted it a little bit. Should I really be running this? Because it kept crashing. You know, I would like fire up the camera app to take a picture that's in, you know, of my kids doing something great, and the app would crash, and, you know, I wouldn't be able to take the picture. It was frustrating, but the betas have gotten better. As I was on vacation, it kind of took a turn for the worse. I did an over-the-air update to, I think it was the previous beta. I think that was beta 5. Might have been beta 4. And I set it to install, and I think I went to bed or something. Like, it was kind of slow. I was on bad like hotel Wi-Fi. And when I woke up, my phone was totally bricked. It did not work at all. And did not start up. You know, I needed to restore it. Well, it started, and it said like plug into iTunes, you know, you're in trouble. And so I restored it, and then I always, before I install a new version of the OS, I do a backup to iCloud. I've been using iCloud exclusively for, I guess, a year or so. I don't sync with iTunes. I always do a backup first. I restored. I said, you know, get this backup. The backup just wouldn't finish. Failed. Long story short, the whole thing process just really was not good. And I ended up having a phone with this beta version of the OS with none of my apps. So it was never able to like finish restoring. And so I said, whatever. I mean, I got to use my phone.
None of your apps and none of your app data, therefore.
Yeah. And that's the key part that was frustrating. So there are some apps, a couple apps I use where if you do a backup, you know, it backs up the documents for that app and then restores them and everything's fine. If the restore fails and that app can't sync with like iCloud itself or its own sync service or Dropbox, that data's gone, you know, like you can't really get it back. And the, you know, in theory that those documents are on iCloud, and it would be awesome if there was an interface where I could go to iCloud and say, you know, scroll through my list of apps, click on that app, say, I want that data, but there's no way to do that. And I've actually had customers of TweetLiber run into this before too, where they don't understand how backups work, and they restore their iPad and they don't restore the backup. And then they wonder what happened to some of their, you know, preferences or data. Anyway, it was a very frustrating experience. I don't know if you've ever had anything like this before, but there were a couple apps that don't sync, and I did lose that data. And it's just a reminder that apps should sync. Apps should be able to sync the data so that they can get the data back without having to rely on like full OS backups.
You heard it here first, folks. Apps should sync. Manton's groundbreaking platform for his new campaign into the future of software development. You know, Manton, I do backup religiously to my Mac. I guess I don't have enough faith in iCloud. You know, it's probably fair to say that you have to expect a little bit the potential for failure if you're beta testing a new OS. So I guess I empathize with that failure to restore from iCloud, but I wonder if that's somewhat like attributable to little quirks in the OS.
First of all, I've never had a problem with iCloud restores before, and I didn't have a problem with beta 1, 2, and 3.
Right.
Or 4, or ever.
But how many times were you restoring? Like, were you...
Right, never. Yeah, it was always over the air. Well, no, I think there was one restore in there.
Okay.
And then the rest were over the air. But I think, I don't blame the beta OS, actually, for this problem. I blame... the Wi-Fi was so flaky when I was doing the restore.
Yeah.
I think iCloud itself is kind of to blame. It was confused. The OS didn't know how to recover from like bad network situations in the middle of a restore. So I think I blame that a little more than the beta.
Right.
But
well, you know, I don't have the exact problem you've had because I don't use iCloud for backup. But even having the backup to my disk can lead to some frustrating situations, even when apps sync. And in particular, I had a situation occur where I guess through some failure on my part to adequately understand Apple's logic when it comes to iCloud syncing for notes. You know, it's always like, mm-hmm. Do you want to sync your notes, your to-dos, your reminders, your all this, your calendar? And it's like, do you want to sync it with this iCloud? I don't know. Maybe I'm making it more complicated than it needs to be, but through some turn of events, it seemed that I like turned off syncing and turned on syncing and turned it off, or I don't know what I did, but somehow all my notes are gone. Hmm. And I think I left a lot of notes in, and yes, you know, laugh at me if you will, I still use Apple's Notes app. You know, not one of these third party apps that is undoubtedly better, but I had a bunch of notes in there. And then I just kind of like gradually accumulated them over the years, as you do. And I had a lot of faith in the fact that because I was doing backups to my Mac, I would always be able to get those notes if I needed to. Yeah. What I wasn't counting on was Apple at some point, you know, removing the notes from my data store and me not noticing when that happened. Because I don't actually use the notes all that often. But, right. You know, I went in, one thing I keep, like, my mom's recipe for nachos is in there. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to make nachos. It's been a few weeks. I go in there and I don't have anything. I got like 3 notes that came from I don't know where. Yeah. And here's where the problem gets tricky. I do have a backup of all of my phone data to my Mac. However, the most recent backup doesn't have the notes because obviously Apple deleted them. But I do have a backup, you know, on Backblaze and through Time Machine of all of my disk stuff.
Right.
So somewhere there is a backup you know, it's been recently enough, I think, that there's like an iterative backup of this note data. How do I find it? Well, I have an encrypted backup, you know, because I'm super paranoid about everything. And I, you know, so I have a back, the iPhone backup is encrypted and it's stored on my encrypted file vault disk. And that's encrypted and stored up on, you know, Backblaze. And there's no like third party, like real good. I mean, there's some tools to go through iPhone backups, like, you know, kind of scrape through them. But once they're encrypted, you're out of luck.
Yeah.
So I think what I might be able to do is go through, I think that the format for the encrypted backups is such that you can still see the manifest of files and possibly the file sizes. So I think I could go through and say, first of all, find out where in the backup the notes data should be, then go back through my Time Machine backups looking for when the notes got smaller, I guess.
Wow.
And then I have to, I guess, take that backup and restore that to, I don't know, probably a dummy iPhone that I, because I am a, you know, a rich guy with dummy iPhones.
Gold-plated iPhones. Lying around.
And I guess I have to restore to a phone I don't actually intend on using just to get all my notes onto there and then save them off somewhere else. It's a nightmare.
Yeah. And so the notes is a great example, actually, of this sort of opaque, you don't know where your data is, you can't get to it in any meaningful way problem. Because compare that to a notes app that syncs with Dropbox.
Yep.
Your notes are in individual files. They're already synced to your Mac into a folder with text files. They're on Dropbox. If you delete them, there's a backup. Dropbox allow you to go back and restore. You can go directly into a folder with the app name probably and see just the notes for that app. And that's how this stuff should work. And the data that I lost is similar. If they had a Dropbox sync in those apps, it would have been very easy to go back and find the data. I would know exactly where it was. And I don't know. I think this is just a really strong argument for not just sync, as I said before, but sync in some way that the user can understand where the data is.
Yeah.
And this is, as sync becomes more important, as people depend on it and expect it, it becomes even more important for the data actually to be readable.
Yeah, I think it would, in particular for my problem, it seems like it would be a very respectful move on Apple's part if there was some, because, you know, obviously it knows how to encrypt the data and store it on my Mac. I don't know what the deal is. I don't know if it's like, maybe the deal is, it seems like whatever it's doing for encryption and decryption there, it should be able to offer me a portal into that somehow, you know, store the data somehow so that I can use my same encryption passphrase on my Mac to get at the data if I need to. Yeah.
I don't think Apple's ever going to do that. I think we need to, iCloud is great for some things, but I think that for data that the user needs to actually get to, I think that we have to use better formats.
Yeah.
And more stuff that's just more open and just makes more sense to the user and is more readable.
Yeah.
You can move between apps. I don't know. I feel pretty strongly about this, and I think the longer we let this sync problem get out of control, the worse it's going to be for just picking up the pieces when everything's a mess.
Well, and it's like I'm an extremely technical nerd who is struggling to figure out how to restore the years of lost notes that I lost on my phone. Yeah. If this happened to most people in my family, it would just be throw up your arms. I mean, I'm ready to throw up my arms, and it wouldn't even be a consideration for them that there's a way to get it back. And I don't even know yet if there is a way for me to get it back. I guess we'll find out. But if anybody out there has any tips for me, I guess, you know, I found this great tool actually from Patrick Kennedy of the of Tokens fame. He has a tool that will help you like browse and dump the data from your iPhone backups. But unfortunately, it doesn't make any effort to decrypt that data. So I can like dump from my backup files all of these beautiful files that are filled with gibberish because they're encrypted. So I guess the next step would be if I could figure out how to decrypt that, you know, given that I do know the passphrase,
right?
That would be, I might be cooking there. But
that sounds like a good, I mean, this is going to be a lot of time and energy, but if the notes are that important, that sounds like a pretty decent path to follow.
And I would be happy to have a solution for it also, just as a security blanket going forward with this kind of stuff, you know. And it's like, I don't want to decrypt my backups. You know, people say, well, I don't encrypt my backups because my disk is already encrypted on my Mac. Well, mine too. And I guess that's a good argument. I don't strictly need to encrypt them, but you know, there's these other usability benefits. Like when you restore an encrypted backup to your phone, you don't have to put in all your passwords again.
Yep.
So I just want to have it all. I want to have it all, Manton. Why can't I have it all?
That's reasonable. But I think, see, the Apple is moving away from the way you do things, though, right? I mean, I think eventually the people who back up to iTunes, today, the people who back up to iTunes are far fewer than the people that just use iCloud or have no backups. When you think about all the iPod touches out there that never sync anywhere. So they're moving away from the way you do things. So they need to either make the iCloud backups more transparent so you can have more control over, for example, just restoring a single app.
Yeah.
Or we just need to, you know, make sure our apps have other backups and sync in other ways. Have one other thing that comes to mind with your situation. Didn't the Notes app used to sync with IMAP at one point? Am I making that up?
I don't know. I don't know, but
because I was thinking there may be another backup in IMAP server somewhere.
Yeah.
This stuff.
And something else just came to mind, which is you were saying, like, you know, they need to make it more open. Doesn't Apple give developers like kind of exclusive direct access to the iCloud data backend for their own account? Like you can go in as a testing mechanism. I think we can go in through developer Apple.com or something and find and browse our iCloud data. Does that ring a bell?
No, that doesn't ring a bell.
Did I dream this? It doesn't ring a bell. It does. I think really? You can do it. I'm going to look it up and I'm going to find out. But now I'm wondering if there's like some vestigial storage, like some folder there for like, if it's like stored by account and like, you know, they got confused and there's this old storage of account data.
That would be amazing if that's true. Yeah. But not only does it not ring a bell, I thought that, I didn't think they offered anything like that. And when you look at, like, Dropbox announced their data store API recently, and one of the features of it is that it does have a web-based interface where normal people can go in and see the data that's stored in this sort of key-value store style, you know, data. No, it's not really key-value store, but, you know, this non-file-based data store. And so, I mean, that one of the features is you can do that with Dropbox, whereas with iCloud, you're out of luck. So that would really surprised me if there's some web-based interface. I've never heard of this before.
Well, tune in next time, folks. Maybe we'll have answers for all of the mysteries that continue to plague Manton and I. And if you do have, anybody out there does have advice for Manton or I about our data recovery challenges, please drop us a line at coreint or as usual, feedback at coreint.org. Manton, it's good to have you home in Austin again. I'm actually going to be traveling next week, so we'll see what we can do there. But this is the busy summer months. It's crazy time here in America. I guess it's crazy time everywhere in the Northern Hemisphere. But it's nice chatting with you again, Manton, and we'll talk again soon.
All right. See you.